my great pleasure to introduce our second speaker, Tan Lei from Université d'Angers, who speak on William Thurston's core entropy theory.
Yes, so I'm very proud to be chosen as a person who represents an entire team of people who was trying to follow the one of the last work of Bill Thurston. I think that was a topic that he was working for the last 2 years of his life, one of the topics. And the last two talks he gave in mathematical conference was about this theory. So I will try to my best to convey his ideas and from my personal experience that understanding Bill Thurston is never an individual person's business. So it was a collective work, we will see later on. Anyway, so that's in JackFest in 2011, Bill gave a talk on the theory and he explained what the beginning of the story when he started with Jack. So that's his version of the theory compared to Jack talked on Monday. So what they were working at that moment is the iterating of such a simple map, it's a parabola. If you start from a point, you start to iterate, you go to diagonal and then graph, diagonal graph, graph, the graph, you can see that the trees, it traces kind of complicated dynamical system, and it's very sensitive to the shape of your parabola. If you change a little bit, the entire orbit would be very different. So how do you measure the complexity of such a dynamical system? So I will say a little bit of the classical mean of theory, and then I'll go to the modern part. So if you take a continuous map, and then there is a quantity called topological entropy that measures the complexity of dynamical system. You can see that at this moment, this thing has just two monotonicity intervals. They are called laps. So when I start to iterate this map, the graph will become complicated. Now you see four laps, and you continue, you see eight laps. If you continue, you can see that it's not sure it doubles each time. It's going to be more and more complicated. So what this quantity measures is the number of this going up and down, and this is something that explodes to infinity, so you are measuring the speed of the growth speed of this sequence of numbers, and that's a dynamical quantity to measure the complexity of this map of the dynamical system. So Milner Thurston, they just said that if you want to compute this one, you just need to iterate one particular point, just look at, you even don't need to know the precise of it, you just need to know that it's which time is, one is on the left, one is on the right, you recall that leading sequence. That sequence is a combinatorial information. With that sequence, you can just plug in the formula and then it will encode the entropy. That formula will give you the entropy. So you just need to record the leading sequence. So that's a beautiful theory, 100 pages long paper. And inside, once they apply their theory, you can work from z squared plus c. You can just now play with parameters. You look at this. This is, so c is, I put z, you should think as x, because I'm working on this parabola. And then c is the parameter which tells the shape, how high your parabola is. So depending on the parameter, you plug in their formula, you check what happens, and they had computers at that time, they drew this picture. So when you look at the picture, this entropy, it says that if you make this parabola deeper, then the entropy is growing, so the C goes this way. So that's the theorem. You can just prove that the parameter dependency of this entropy, which is something usually difficult to compute. Not only they can compute, they can even prove that it depends continuously. And the proof, if you understood what I said, is actually very simple because it's just the leading sequence, the critical point where it goes, you just need to record it left and right. If you change slightly the slope, the depth of your problem. For a long time, your leading sequence will be the same. It's only at the end it's going to change. So that's continuity, okay? And then you see also monotonicity, and there's another part of the theorem, which is due to Doherty, Hubbard, Sullivan, that they show that this function is also monotonic, decreasing from log 2 to 0. The coordinate is, I'm using exponential of it. So now I try to go to modern part of this theory. So when you take a real polynomial, it acts on real line, but it also acts on complex plane. So let's see what happens in the complex plane. In complex plane, you iterate, there's another set, compact set that's more natural, which is the set which is called the Julia set, the set of points that under iteration that do not escape to infinity. See, this tells you this, these points are escaped to infinity, and the color will tell you the rate of escaping. And the remaining set is called the Julia set. In the remaining set, you'll see an interval there, and this is the interval we've been iterating. On this interval, you have a dynamical system. So this interval is kind of a subset for the environment of my dynamical system, but I have a bigger one. So we can think that on this compact set, we want to measure the complexity of this dynamical system. We might want to see the topological entropy on the Julia set. But unfortunately, topological entropy is kind of measuring the growth of number of pre-images, and due to the fundamental theorem of algebra, each point there, it has exactly 2 pre-images and then exactly 4 pre-images, so the growth just log 2 independent of the choice of the polynomial. So the entropy in this sense, working on this set, doesn't give information on the particular polynomial. That's why that even though the complex one is more interesting, if you look at this real part of that, this one is going to depend on the polynomial. So this is, even in a complex setting, gives you some dynamical information that depends on the polynomial. So you want to recall that one. And that's why for this dynamical system, we can define its core part of the dynamical system, which is this real line that we saw it before, and then we define a new entropy, which is not the, we define the co-entropy to be the topological entropy we have seen on the real line, which is the entropy of the complex, whole of the real polynomial acting on the complex plane, but on the core part of it. Okay? So, real polynomial acts on the complex plane, complex polynomial acts also on complex plane. Now we want to see what does it mean a core of a dynamical system, and then what's its entropy. So if I take this square C complex, my iteration still makes sense. There's still a Julia set, but then I lost the whole symmetry. I can use the fact that was a symmetry to find some subinvariant, some subset that I can measure the complexity. And again, if you want to look at topological entropy on the entire set, it's log 2. There's no independent of the polynomial. So a good substitute, if it exists, it doesn't exist always, is that you look at the orbit of 0. In this case, the orbit of 0 maps to that one, is period 4. And our eye can see already a tree structure. And actually, there is a theory of Doherty Hubbard, it's called Hubbard tree, that inside of this complicated Julia set, you can find a one-dimensional dynamical system, which is a tree. Tree is not that far from interval. So on this tree, you can think it's forward invariant, and it captures the core part of the dynamical system. So we can define the core entropy as the entropy of the map on this core part. And now, if I change the map, this core is going to move. So that's a substitute to generalize this sense of co-entropy. Another way to think of this is that if our observer, we observe the tree structure easily from our eyes, but if you put the observer at infinity, that he would see the harmonic measure. So the harmonic measure would see almost just the tip point. You cannot really see this core. So core is a way to throw out what the action of the map on the tips and to see what's inside.
Question?
Yes?
Computer programs to draw the Julia set. Is there a computer program to
draw the Hubbard tree? That's a question you should ask your student. I don't know. At least one was given, but I think he did it by hand.
In this case, I didn't.
Well, yes, because I was cheating. Because if the Julia set has no interior, then it's a dendrite and it's locally connected. There's a unique convex hole that connects the finite many points you want to see, and it's not automatically for the invariant. But in the case I'm showing, there's some interior point. So then I have to tell you how to go through interior in a particular way. But because the return map is z squared, so you have internal rays, I use that information to connect things. But then you have to cut, you run through infinite many components. You have to show kind of convergence statement that you can correct each time. In the end, it converges to a nice forward invariant tree. So I don't want to go into that detail. Was that convincing?
When your tree has fruit, you go to the core.
Yes, sir? Well, you can think there's no interior, then that's just a unique way to do it. Okay? So now I have this tree, so I can think the tree is kind of just real line, and I can change the coordinates and have just a skinny tree dynamical system. It's not far. So for those who like interval dynamical system, it's just one epsilon away to the new dynamical system. And then what's nice is that combinatorially, at least, almost all polynomials have. It's not 100% correct, but the tree do exist for a dense set of parameters. Okay, nobody complains. So there's another way, more combinatorial, to see things, because if you don't like this tree, definition of tree, definition of Julia set, but you want to see combinatorially, this entropy can be seen from Dwight Harbert's ray foliations. So Dwight Harbert proved that if you have this was the Julia set where we have our dynamical system, you can have a change of coordinates from outside of disk to the outside of your Julia set. So the rays there are foliated there. You get a foliation of rays. And what's nice is that this change of coordinate conjugate the transport the dynamical system, which is just z squared, to your polynomial, which means that if you have take a ray of angle t by z squared, go to angle 2t, and then you see this trace there. So you take the ray of angle t, you apply your dynamical system, it's going to be the ray of angle 2t. So you use the outside, that's kind of natural dynamical coordinate to see each point where it goes. And this coordinate is encoded by the external rays. So you can think that rays stays outside, but they tend to go to your Julia set. When they go there, what happens? Some of them, most of them, harmonically, most of them will land on T points. They are single, not married. But there are married couples. So you see, there are rays there, especially in this real case, the ray and the angle, which is one, this is, what is, opposite angle, the two rays land at the same point. Landing at the same point is a dynamical invariant, that if these two rays are at the same point, you iterate that point, they go somewhere else, then the corresponding iteration of the rays continue to land together. So this landing together is a dynamical information. Then you can think that I don't care about this anymore. I just try to recall here which pair are landing together. So I'm just looking at angle pairs landing together, which now become a subset of a torus. Or you can think of angle landing points, that angles anyway. So, and here, you remember that the map on the boundary is just angle doubling. So if you look at pairs, it's pairs of angle doubling, then it acts on the torus. Now, torus, I will see some subset. This map now, it doesn't depend on the dynamical system anymore, but the subset is where it encodes the dynamical, my polynomial information depends on C. So I can use this entropy. Now I'm have a combinatorial map, which is torus map that everybody likes. And on that, you find a subset, and you measure the entropy on that subset. And then you can change the parameter when changing that. That subset changes, but this map does not change. That's already a good hope to study parameterization when you want to see continuity. The map doesn't change. It's just some subset that's moving. Okay? So a theorem combining minor ideas is that binding entropy is always well-defined, although the tree does not well-defined, it's not always well-defined, and it encodes this co-entropy if the co exists. So if we don't want to know what happens there. We just study this combinatorial dynamical system. There's a family of things that we can measure, and then all this is highest dynamical background. Okay, so now, because we are moving slowly to the combinatorial world, we can also forget polynomial. We can encode each polynomial by a purely combinatorial information, and then we can just stay in torus about torus map. So encoding polynomial by laminations. So people like laminations. I define a primitive measure. So this thing would encode my polynomial of degree d. D would encode degree d polynomial. Is a disjoint, a union of disjoint leaves and ideal polygons inside of the d, such that when you take off the leaves, you have the same the good number of rooms, d regions, and the condition you want is that the each region should occupy the boundary. See, this region has three boundary curves. The sum of the three lengths should be 1 over d. In this case, it's 4. So I have 4 rooms. Each room should occupy 1/4 of the window space. You can imagine that it's on an island. You have a round building with windows looking out sea. So each of the guest room has, even though the windows is not connected, the total view is equal for each room. Is this clear? In this one, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 rooms. This is just a concrete wall that separates. So each room occupies the equal space of boundary arc. So this is called a primitive measure. And in degree D, in degree 2 is very easy. You just have to separate into 2 rooms. So you just take a straight line, a diagonal, that would separate 2 rooms. The thing is that this thing, this really lives on the boundary of the disk, so it has coordinates. When you change the coordinates, even the same shape, you rotate a little bit, the dynamical system would be different. So this thing we have seen now, we can just say that this polynomial actually is encoded by this diagonal chord, which is 1/10 and 3/5. So what does it mean combinatorially encode this dynamical system? It means that what I'm interested in is the two rays landing together. And the rays landing together is completely encoded by this information. I take 2 rays somewhere. I look at very far from infinity. I can already see if they land. I don't need to go very close to see if they land together or not, because I can just iterate the angle and see. You see this thing, this is a big disk, and you have a far away, it's just a diagonal line. So the you see the rays where it goes left, which side of your, there are 2 sides of the plane. If 2 rays, they have the same itinerary when you, and the angle doubling, then the theorem says that they land together.
The loading, the endpoints of geodesic can be measured by those, the 2 endpoints?
Yes. So if you have a ray coming in, it has a certain angle, and that angle encodes the dynamical system. Yeah, the degree 2 measure is just this line here. This line would encode the entire information. You just need one. It's like this word plus C, you just need 1 C. Combinator, you just need 1 diameter. And that, so another way to say this is you use laminations. Let me go backwards. You see this whole thing is encoded by this map, how it identified boundary things to go to that one. But identified boundary things means that you are defining an equivalence relation on the circle. An equivalence relation, you can link them inside as a convex hull. Then you get a lamination. So what the topology of this Julia set is just the quotient of the disk by that induced lamination. So that's another way to see that you can forget about polynomials. You define invariant lamination, you take quotient, and that's another way to see that it encodes. So now we are completely in the combinatorial world. We just take a major in degree. If you don't like our degree, just take a diagonal. And then each diagonal encodes some information. Then in this way, you just look at this angle doubling map or angle degree D map. For measures given, you can define combinatorially a subset staying in the torus, and then you can study its entropy. So this is my candidate of core entropy. And of course, this is linked. If this thing happened to be related to a polynomial, then the polynomial has this tree, and I want these two to define the same thing. So this, the theory was built that these two should, this, all these things should give the same entropy and this enclosed co-entropy. But people like us had to work very hard to prove that they are really equal. So it's not, it should be true. Okay, so here comes a beautiful part of the theory that Bill, when he wanted to do this, he wanted to compute, so one you can make that your measure to be periodic, to be rational. If the, all the angles involved in your measure, like diagonal, to be rational, he found a truly ingenious way to compute the core entropy bypassing core. He will not compute the core, he will not compute the subset, the entropy, a dimension, whatever, he just gave you a number. So I will try to explain a little bit this algorithm, which is actually very simple. And this was discovered in March 2011. I remember in this Jack Fest conference at the lunch table, he was talking about this all the time. He was asking us, what is Hubbard tree? What is the pullback of a pullback metric? And we just didn't know what he was talking about. And he was actually searching for this algorithm. Once he found it, it is kind of very easy to see. So you see my chord is 1/10 and then 3/5. So I iterate forward of these two by angle doubling and they go to 2/5. Yeah, A1, A2, A3, A4. So the forward orbit is finite because I'm rational. The forward orbit by angle doubling is just a finite point. And then you use this set of points, you form abstract linear space by looking pairs of them as the base, the basis of your linear space, the unordered pairs. Morally, I think it's kind of length between two points in the dynamical world. But abstractly, you can just see just pairs of points. And then the linear map says that if you take one base vector, what happens? You have to decide to see whether it stays in one, this one, like 1/5 and 2/5. Where's 1/5? 1/5, 2/5. They stay in the same room. If they stay in the same side of your measure, then you have apply one rule, which is very simple. The map will is going to just by angle doubling of the numerators. All pairs of the red points, except these two are identified. So you see, I have 1, 2, 3, 4 points. I need to cook up all pairs of the 4 points, which is like you are saying all pairs of post-critical points in the tree. Okay, so for each base point correspond to each line here, you see what happens in the tree and then you encode it. So in the case that if they are on the same side, the map is injective, it's going to be just mapped to the image pair. But if these two pairs, this 1/5 and 4/5, they are on opposite side, then the image is kind of addition of two base vectors. So what is the 1/5 go to 2/5, that's fine, but you add the image of the middle one. So the middle one plays a role of kind of, because you have to go through that line, so you think that you have to look at the image of that and image of that. That's why you get a double. I have 6 vectors, so if you don't like to listen afterwards, you can compute the remaining ones. You have understood the rule. Anyway, so this is very easily to be implemented, and Bill did implement it.
So 1/5, 2/5, does what?
1/5, 2/5, because you see it's on which side of your, you look at the if they're separated by the diagonal or not. 1/5, 2/5 are on the same side, in the same room. Okay, then the rule is just, this is mapped to the double, angle doubling.
Okay,
so now the next vector, the base vector is 1/5 and 4/5. And this happened to be in separate, they are in separate rooms. Then you should think the image of this one, of that one, plus the image of this one and that one. You go through the separating line. So the image of this couple can be applied the first rule, because they are in the same room. The boundary counts in each part. It doesn't really matter.
The two
Yes, the diagonal is chosen so that when you angle double, it gets always the same point.
So
So, see, I'd like to make your remark, because I just understood what you're saying. So, you have four points in the tree on the left, and any two of them determine an arc of the tree. And the tree is forward invariant. As you have four points in the tree on the left, and any two distinct points determine an arc in the tree. The tree is forward invariant, and that image of that arc is the union of arcs at the same time. And you just want to understand that transition phenomena combinatorially. Is that right?
Yes. Well, one way to see why it works is to see that on this tree, you have a Markov, as I have seen before, you have a transition dynamical system text tells that this arc is mapped to that arc, that mapped to that arc. So for that transition metric, you have a nice leading eigenvector and leading eigenvalue and leading eigenvector. Leading eigenvector gave you the invariant length of each part. And this tree is encoding the new length of the marked points. So you know for this matrix, at least the sum, this length for that matrix would be invariant. So you have an eigenvector with that leading that eigenvalue. Then you have to be sure that one is the leading eigenvalue of this new matrix. Okay? So if you plug in this computer, you can just, you have this matrix, you calculate its leading, it's a Bayesian-Fabian matrix. Not me. Okay, so it's a Bayesian-Fabian matrix, and then it has a leading eigenvalue, and the entropy is log of that one. So the growth, yes.
Is there an algebraic variety for which this eigenvalue is not Frobenius?
The
question is, I mean, you know, the very fact that everything's being localized to action on the finite sort of dynamical pictures, is there a natural algebraic variety defined over a finite field for which this eigenvalue is an eigenvalue of Frobenius segments of the molecule?
This okay? So you can see the algorithm would work for any degrees. What happens that you will, rather than have one room, you will have measures that several in several rooms. So you have to record which room you have passed by, and you have to add up. You might have several vectors adding up. It's really just record where you go. If you take 2 points that pass three rooms, you have to record the boundary things. And the boundary under the new map is always go to the same point, so you never need to worry which point you choose. Sorry. Then?
If you avoid the speakers, then you won't get the feedback. Don't
okay, sorry. Sorry. I think I was hiding. Okay. So once he found the algorithm, the first thing he did is to program in Mathematica. So he could just change the diagonal. The diagonal is a parameter. When you change the diagonal, for each diagonal, you have entropy. The algorithm just works for rational ones. And he was so proud, he was sending us to all of us. And this is the message he sent to Jack I got yesterday. You can see that himself was really very proud of it. And we were really just, wow, what's that? And there are a lot of immediate conjectures when you're looking at this graph. It is continuous. And you see there are a lot of the tips are kind of at the dyadic angles. Can you prove that? And this thing has kind of an infinite tangential to zero. Can you prove that? And there's a counter set of angles that the entropy is zero. Actually, at each level, you will have counter set of angles landing at zero. Lot of questions on this problem, on this graph, just we don't understand. And Bill was himself working on it too. There are results of Julio and Yong. They now can prove that it's lower semi-continuous, which is not an ideal proof because they have to go to really the complex plane z squared plus c case to use that information to come back to get the combinatorial information. You would like some purely combinatorial. This is all defined purely combinatorially. Just a diagonal and iterate, and you have this thing, and then you want to see that this, if this thing is continuous.
What's the bottom axis of
this one? This is the angle, the double of the angle, the external angle of the monobrod set.
So,
see, it goes to. That's the graph, but he didn't compute like that. You cannot compute Hubbard theta easily. Yes. You can do purely combinatory, or you can think of the Hubbard tree. So once he did that, of course, now he would do cubics. It's as easy to program for cubic polynomials. It's only you have two measures, so he did this. But somehow there was a bug in his program. He never fixed that. Somebody might have a better picture. At this one, I got this picture. He said he had to fix this bug. But anyway, you can see that it's two-dimensional picture. Now here comes another beauty of the theory, that what is the parameter space? You see, this looks as a square, but it shouldn't be a square. There are some identifications. So the next theorem, that's next question, that's completely natural, is to study parameter space of degree 2 D majors. And that's what his own account of this discovery of beautiful theorem, of his beautiful theorem 1 year later. You can see after 1 year, he was still very proud of his discovery. He was saying that it took me a while to realize that the set of degree D majors describes a spine for the set of D disjoint points in C. That is the fundamental group, is the braid group, and higher homology groups are trivial. So I think that his last two talks, he was actually talking this theorem. How do you just, not the majors, you remember, just cut the disk into windows. It's purely combinatorial thing. You want to study the space of this combinatorial object, subject. And fortunately, we have some traces of email messages. So I will try to trace, the proof is very simple. I'll try to see if we can trace his discovery path. I found that very beautiful. So in March, 2011, he sent email starting playing with quadratics. Quadratics is very simple. That just means a single diameter of the circle. So the parameter space is just circle worth. It's just quotient. Okay, let's study cubics. So cubics, what happened? There are three types of measures. One is a generic one that the two sides are different, and then each occupies one third of the room. And then there's this parallel one that each occupies one sixth of length, and then one third, one third. And there's this triangle one, each occupy. There are just these three types of measures. So the parameter space, you can think it's annulus. How do you parameter this annulus? You can use this angle here. This angle is 1 through 10. And then you can measure this length. This length is from 0 to 1 sixth. Okay, so if it's not 0, I'm there. If it's not 1 sixth, if it goes to 1 sixth, it goes to this one. If it goes to 0, it comes to this one. So it is this closed annulus, but you have to take care of the quotient. When you go to lower boundary, it means these two angles would collide. Then when you take one third of the turn, you get already, so this one is, would you go to 0, you go to one third of the turn, you get already the same measure. So on this part, you go one third, it's the same thing because you rotate one third, it's the same set, and you go two third, it's the same set. So on the lower boundary, when this angle is 0, you have to model out a z cube action. On the upper boundary, it means that these two sides are equal. So what should we model out? You take half turn of this angle. You get back to the same measure. So you have to model out the z square action on top. So it's just closed annulus, z cube action, that option. And standard set. I think this was a toy that Bill knew since he was 5 years old. So he immediately gave five descriptions of the same thing that he said, I want to embed it in S3, then I can see what it is. And his embedding, well, my presentation is slightly different. I will show you animations. So this annulus, I need to quotient out. It's not going to be manifold nor orbifold because you are going to have an open book structure. But we'll see. You cut this into half by a curl curve, and I'm going to embed the upper half to one inside of one solid torus and the lower half inside of the second solid torus. When I put these two solid tori together, it's going to be a surface in S3. So just see each side to see better the singularity. And I have an animation that tells you, you can see how to, you remember the upper half I'm making it black, but when you take a curve, you slide the red curve closer to the boundary, this one is going to be squeezed twice. So you have to see that in the embedding. And the other one is going to be three times. Okay. So this, the green one is a solid torus, and the green one is a torus surface, but inside of the solid torus, I put a plate, a black plate. At the moment, you see two red curves, one here, they kind of double cover the central curve, but these two red are not connected. I need one single curve that double, when I moves in, it double cover the central curve. What should I do? I need to connect these two curves. Okay. Now the two red curves become one single red curve. When you turn it once, actually you turn the central curve twice. So you do see the double cover. But the problem of this picture, we all know what it is that it doesn't fit the embedding of the other one. So we have to be a little bit more careful. So Bill said immediately you don't do this one. You should turn it one full turn more. Okay, so that's one half of the embedding. Shall we see the other one? Where it is? Why? Oop, sorry. Run V. One. How did it work? So I got some new understanding of Mobius band. I always thought Mobius band is just one band, you twist, you end. Actually, you should think Mobius band is two bands glued at the central line. What you're twisting is the along the central line. So if you glue two bands, why can't you do three bands? So this is the Y shape. You can see that the Y, it has three bands. Oh, this doesn't work, sorry. Did you see the Y that developing? So it's three bands. It's a Mobius band, like a band, but with three leaves around the central, the curl curve. And this thing sits in the torus. Now I have three nice curves that triple cover the central curve. Of course, it's not the one I want because I want one single red curve that triple covers three the central curves. What should we do? Which 100? Minus or positive? So this is rotate only 60 degrees. And now what you get is not a knot, it's an unknot. So I have to rotate once more. That's it. So you can see it's a trefoil. And the boundary, the red curve lives on the torus surface, but the curl curve lives inside of a solid torus. And the two fit together. And that's the picture. Unfortunately, I don't have animation that shows how they glue together. I'm sorry. But I checked with specialists that my twisting was right, because I had choices to turn left and right. I might end up two opposite hand trefoil knot, and I cannot glue them together. But it doesn't matter, I have choices anyway, so I can twist the other way around. And this surface, by the way, this builds presentation, he immediately drew the picture and he sent it to us. Of course, the first time we saw it, we didn't know what he was talking about. And this is his screen, the Möbius band, with the Möbius band in the vertical torus, and this is the Y-shaped band in the vertical torus. And when you glue together, he worked out a very complicated mathematical formula to plug them in the Mathematica. So they was playing, he was just playing with Mathematica, but his main question is, I still want to, what was that? No, not yet, what did I say? Okay, so now he gave his four or five descriptions of this surface because he had learned this. So the first thing he said, you can make a Möbius band by twisting a long thin strip three half turns, as we have seen, and so that its boundary is a trefoil knot. And then in S3, if you make the Möbius band wider and wider, it's going to crash on the vertical direction three times. So that's his view. He didn't say the two half, he just take one Möbius band and crashes. And then he has another way to say things, take two great circles, kind of line that's winding around that I want to go in. The third one is the most important. He said this surface that he had just seen in front of his eyes in S3 is something he has recognized. He said, oh, this is something I know. This is also a spine of the complement of the discriminant locus of cubic polynomials. So I just try to embed abstractly my abstract surface to something, and all of a sudden it's a familiar subject. So he just say, well, I'm not sure how that description would fit in. There's a connection. And the next day, he gave another description of the same surface, and he says that I don't know exactly how this relates either to the cubic major sets or to the parameter space, but it is suggestive. So he was guessing that something it should be related because it's the same surface. So what happened? And then he continued to draw pictures, and so his question is now, how do you relate a major like this to a polynomial? Okay, so he said this surface now he has recognized is precisely a spine of space of cubic polynomials with simple roots. I should remind the talk of Benson Fab was talking about this space. So rather than getting by coincidence, there should be a reason. So he was looking a correspondence between these majors and a polynomial with simple roots. And he was saying it's suggestive, there should be some connection. So that was 5 days later. We don't know what made him discover the proof, but at least he said, now I know how to prove it, and it's obvious. So the trick is, you see, his major subject was this one. He tried to connect to that one. And the trick is not go this way, it's to go backwards. Let's start from a polynomial, and let's see if we can cook up a major, and then see if we can make a connection. So he started with a polynomial with simple roots, then he cook up a major. What did he do is that in the polynomial, you think the polynomial it acts on the complex plane to some other complex plane, and in that complex plane, you draw just radial lines from 0 to infinity, and you pull back that radial line field. And that's what you see. You see the four zeros are there, you see locally as the radial line field, but the four basins have to somehow be living together, and the separating lines are these blue lines, and this blue line here, you see this one, the opening angle is going to be, the image of these two blue lines is going to be a single line, so the opening angle is going to be one fourth, degree four, yeah, one fourth. So then this one is one fourth, and then you see another room here with this part and this part, the sum of that is one fourth. Am I doing it right? No. Okay. The sum of the three is one fourth, and this is one fourth. So the blue ray you have seen is a major, a degree four major that looking at infinity, it separates the circle at infinity at one fourth of the room for each one. So once you see that picture, the other direction is obvious. You just take a Riemann surface. No, take the four copies, you can remember one, two, three, four, and this thing has angles. So each copy, you look at the angle that's encoded by your major. You take four copies of complex plane, you cut them off along the lines that was prescribed, by the major, and then you just glue the surface together. You get abstract Riemann surface, which is uniformized to a polynomial pullback of a major. So that just gives you the projection. I'm happy to explain more details. I know I'm going very fast because I still have other things to say. It's okay. The proof is actually quite elementary, but it's just this way to discover things. It wasn't clear from his starting point how to go to the ending point. The way that he chose the other way around, immediately you could see the path. So that's the point I want to try. Actually, I explained this this story in an article I wrote for David Gabay. I don't know if he's... Anyway, they are preparing a collection of memorial articles for Thurston, and some details are there. So once he has done that, he want to combine the things that with the old kneading theory that he has done many years ago with Jack. So in the same time, once he said for real polynomials, the kneading determinant works really well and get entropy. I'm trying to understand how this theory generalizes, particularly so entropy can be directly computed to cases that are not post-quantitatively finite. Remember, his algorithm was only working for rational map case, but the kneading theory can handle post-quantitatively infinite case, and they just grow continuously their parameter. So I'm interested in understanding the monodromy issue also, how to make a partial order on the kneading data that makes entropy monotone. So immediately you can see a huge research project. And unknown to everybody, there is a young PhD student, unknown to his own PhD supervisor. Nobody knew that he was working actually in the same direction from totally different motivations. It's unrelated to Thurston's investigation. But actually what he did is that you take the Hubbard tree, dynamical system, you cut off and make it into a discontinuous interval map. And in that discontinuous interval map, when you try to prove out the parameters, it's like a little tent map, so this height is adjustable depending on your parameter. The branches are the same, but you adjust this height. Then you can build up a new kneading theory, or the similar one. Actually, the kneading theory works for piecewise continuous, piecewise monotone maps, even with weights. So in that, using this approach, using classical mean of Thurston theory, he could prove that. The Hubbard tree now, my Hubbard tree might have post-quantitative, the tree is finite, but my orbit might be post-quantitatively, might be infinite. You see the folding point, this point folds somewhere in this branch. It's like the interval, you fold somewhere, you don't know. But you know globally this branch goes that one, this branch goes that one, but when you go that one, it has some folding. Fold somewhere, and this height is you can adjust. And this is precisely this height here. Depending on the height, the entropy will change. So you expect the same result. What he was trying is to follow, this is the parameter space of Z squared plus C. The mean of Thurston's one is this line, the real parameter on the real line. The mean of Thurston proof that now along this line, the entropy is continuous. And Dwight Hubbard and Sullivan proved it's monotonic. And Tuzo proved that you can find other paths. The way he chose the path so that the general shape of the tree is stable. It's only the height is changing. Following the same path, you do the same theory, you get the same result. You get monotonicity and continuity. And this was what Bill was really intending to do. So I want to say that Bill's picture, that very complicated picture, was kind of you follow the monomer set from outside. You have this also lamination by external rays. For each ray, you compute the entropy. And if you parameterize outside by this single line of rays, you see this graph that he was plotting. So there's just two ways to see the same set. This thing sees from inside, and the other thing sees from outside. And we still don't know very well. That's part of the problem, is to combine the two views to see if give me an external angle, where can I see from inside? And this is part of the open problem. There are some solutions, I think. Okay, this is what Bill said in 1 year later. I'm getting geared up to prove the continuity of entropy. So he really wants to see his graph is continuous. I've been working out more of the theory of invariant laminations, partial orderings, and entropy. I've been enjoying it. So we are happy to know that he still enjoy what he was doing, and he said even more, better for more people to be involved. The next topic is to investigate more carefully the topology of the boundary of the kinetic locus of higher degree polynomials. So that one, all we have seen was degree 2, except the parameterization. It's rather intricate and interesting, and I want to get it right. It's a fun and interesting topic, and I really like his engagement of mathematical problem. It's very personal. I like it. It's fascinating. Okay, so now I want to show you more animations, and some of them was, I think Bill would have liked to see that when he drew this graph on the angle, the first thing he wanted to see is to really draw it on top of the Mandelbrot set to see the entropy on the complex numbers. I remember I was connecting him to Kurt, that Kurt was giving Bill a C code to draw from external angle to the C point and then to the zero thing, but I don't think that worked. Okay, and anyway, so I'm very proud to show you a picture that appeared 2 days ago by the joint effort of Yong and Catherine, that this is the picture that Bill Wang had liked to see. Okay, if it appears, okay. So this, the base is the complex number, and for each number you have kind of encoding external rays. For each ray, for the landing point, you plug the Bill's computation of the entropy, and then you see the graph. This is the core entropy graph of the Mandelbrot set. And I think Yong computed all the data, and then Catherine converted it to Mathematica so that you can rotate. You can see the variation of the entropy. And the real line here, stop, this line here. If you see that graph, this was the mean Nusselsen, how many in 75 there. On this real line, this is the mean Nusselsen graph many years ago. And now let's see a better picture later. There's even a more beautiful one. And one more, no? Okay. So you see the growth of entropy. And the conjecture is that at the tips points are really where you have dyadic angles landing. Okay. Let's stop. So I have one more animation to show. That's also that. Yeah, switch to my computer, please. And one photo. So one more animation to show that's related to the classical mean Nusselsen theory. Okay. So this one, this is the code written by Bill himself. He left us more than 1,000 lines of mathematical code that he used to generate invariant laminations and this core entropy. So what is the, let me just move a little bit this. You can see the black box is a fundamental domain of the torus. And a gradient major is something, it's a geodesic there on the torus. It links two angles of size 1/2, right? So a major is like that. And now you start to iterate the angle doubling map. What is the invariant set that he was encoding? It's the set of points when you iterate the angle doubling map, it stays in these wide regions. Or you can project it to the torus. And so this can be defined purely combinatorially. So I just want to show you that this looks quite naive. Actually, it generates a very complicated dynamical system. So let me try. Okay, this is the major. You're just moving, and the left is this fundamental domain that I want to catch points that when the iterated doesn't escape, it takes half of the torus area. So when you iterate, it's going to go anywhere, you look where it stays in this wide region. And this is the set that you want to compute the entropy. Actually, you have to take off the diagonal. One of the technical problems is that this set is not compact. So we have to treat that problem. And another way to see this is that once you have this diagonal, you can build an invariant lamination by the Z-square map. So Herbert said that I should really emphasize this Sullivan's dictionary between Kleinian groups and the dynamical systems. When you want to study a Fuchsian group, you will build up a lamination that is invariant by your Fuchsian group. And on the other side of the story is that if you want to study a quadratic polynomial, the map is on the boundary is always the same map. That doesn't change. It's Z squared. What encode polynomial is this diagonal. Use this diagonal, you can build up an invariant major lamination by Z squared. It means that if I take the primitive of that point, it would have two. And the primitive of it will have two. So you link only new leaves if they don't cross the existing ones. You can see that. This is invariant. So I take one more. Oh, not the right one. Okay, so that's the first step, invariant. Now I get one more step. Now these 6 points, when they take pull back, they have 12 points. Then they should link together so that they don't cross the pre-existing ones. Because what we are building is going to be the quotient of the disk that combinatorially encode the Julia set. So one more. Oh, a wrong one. So you continue. Okay, it doesn't work anymore. So on the right, you see the building up of invariant lamination, which encodes the polynomial. On the left, each leaf here is a pair of angles. So you can present it in the torus as 2 points, x1 and yx. So this collection of leaves become a set of points. And what the co-entropy is actually measuring the Hausdorff dimension of this set of points minus the diagonal. All the entropy of your angle doubling torus map on this non-compact set is the same. So you can see something about cubic. You can play with the ray. Does it work? Would that crash? No. If it reacts, I'll show you another animation while waiting. Cast what? Continue?
Can I abort the previous one?
Okay. No, it's fine. Sorry, what was the question?
Are the sequences of majors that you're drawing the powers?
No, the upper one.
The powers of the polynomial?
No, I think I have only one major. This is dynamical system generated by this single polynomial. So I'm eating backwards. It's right.
Okay.
Yes. So when you iterate backward, you get a higher degree polynomial major, which is the second iterator of your polynomial. Right, thank you. Okay. So you can see that when you have a room here, then you would like to allow leaves that go from this one to that one. And in this case, it corresponds to a little rectangle. It means that you can have angles in this part multiply so you have rectangles there. These are all the permitted regions. If you go there in the torus region, this would correspond. You make a leaf that cross the existing leaf. That's why you have to forbidden them, because you want to build invariant laminations on the disk. And you can see that it's very complicated. So I don't know if I have time to show, I have one film to show the classical mean Northwestern theory.
Yes.
Which, it's not there anyway. Okay. Do you see the parabolic one? Okay, this is the right one. So on the left is parabola. I will stop at the middle. Wait. And then I will make a temporary stop. So what the theory says that you take any parabola map, you will have a path of monotonic, okay. You will have a path of monotonic maps that plays the role as a change of coordinates, but the things that they will change at before the t, there's some, this is the going to be the entropy. So before t going to the entropy, you will still have a semi-conjugacy, but it conjugates to your map to a dynamical system on a counter map with slope 1 over t. So when t goes to that critical point, critical value, which is the 1 over the entropy, the slope gets entropy. And then this gap disappeared. You remember there was a gap, there was kind of jump all the time. And this theory says that if you take that the central gap to 0, then all the other gaps get shrunk simultaneously at the same moment. And this change of coordinates become monotonic continuous, or you might squeeze some segments, it doesn't matter. And this map, that part of theory says that this map conjugates the original map to this beautiful tent map with constant slope. And once you do the computer program, you want to see what's beyond the T. So I'll show you what happened. Nobody knows what, well, maybe somebody can tell. But still, I like the animation. So the part before T, before the entropy, it has also a semi-conjugacy, and that was suggested by the computer. When you do the computer, you see, oh, it has already some meaning. And then when you look at mean Northwestern's proof, they didn't say the statement, but the proof would prove this easily. So you don't require new ideas. Anyway, so. Now the series is diverging, so it's no more accurate numerically. So it just says that this particular entropy is a very particular moment. If you go beyond that, your change of coordinates is no more monotonic, so it doesn't play the role of change of coordinates anymore. I just have one more photo to show of, then I'm done, sorry. Oh. I have this list of, I said that it was a teamwork. And all these people have helped me in one way or another to understand this and to contribute, or logistically, or moral support, a lot of things, okay? This is a nice photo I like of Bill. I heard from Dylan that the Thurston means king. And this was in Denmark. There was a Viking boat museum, and they have clothes that you can disguise yourself as king. So this is King Bill, and he was looking out somewhere of beautiful shapes. Okay. At the moment, I think it's a question. It's an open problem. It looks continuous. The graph you have seen, there are also in the video, is this a continuous graph? Is this a continuous function? Oh, can I see? Yes. And even that one, you want to see if it's continuous. lower semi-continuous. But even defined on the irrational angles is part of the work. Definition is not clear. How do you do that? You get into entropy on non-compact subsets.
Does it really look like continuous? There are many.
Can I show the plot? Jack got a second plot that I didn't have. Where it is. Sorry. No. Oh, no, I didn't have this. There's enlargement somewhere, like lost. So Bill had an enlargement of this. I think it looks like a, I don't know. I think the you can even expect better continuity at the higher points that they should have be. It can be even harder continuous with harder exponent equal to the value of the function. But of course, there you have no order continuity because the value is zero.
More questions? Okay. If not, let's thank Tanley again.